One piece of advice that I absolutely love from Michael Chatfield, never try to improve more than three things at once. When you're writing a new book or writing a new series or editing for that matter, you often try to get a lot of shit in there, like try to improve the characteristics of some person, try to improve the voice, try to focus on grammar, whatever. Never try to do more than three things at once in a book.
Yep.
Or learn more than three things at once, because you're going to mess it up. So if you want to learn, if you want to improve, that's absolutely cool and it's pretty much needed, but never do more than three things.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road.
Hi everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that invites the fastest of Millers, Lars Machmüller.
Oh yeah. Hi. It's so nice to see you.
You deserve that. Before the podcast, in the Patreon material, Lars has been insulting me and breaking my heart and telling me my puns aren't good. So I think you should all go and buy his books and then leave Amazon reviews. Give him 5 stars, of course, and then tell him that my puns are funny and that he should feel bad.
Yeah.
As
long as you give me money, I mean, you can do anything. That's no problem. I'm like, I will be a sugar daddy or whatever.
You're just like Haylock.
It's true. It's true. I'm cheap. But you also have a foot fetish.
Do you also have a foot fetish? I'm kidding. It's a long story. I'll tell you about it in the bone stuff. Okay. But I need you to pitch me your books.
All right. I am like many other Lit RPG authors. I'm one of those who just take in anything that they play, that they read, and then they channel the exact books that they want to read that don't exist out there. So basically, World of Chains, that's my Bard series, and that is my love letter to Bards. All over, because bards are such a misunderstood class everywhere.
Yes.
I mean, in D&D, everybody just talks about how bad a class they are, how much they suck at combat, how much they are all about getting laid, and that's true.
They make it sound like that's a bad thing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But that's also missing the point. Because the point about being a bard isn't about being good at any of those things at all. It's about being able to tell the story about how they are actually the main character all along, and all the others were just horrible, lousy NPCs. So yeah, that is what World of Chains is all about having a person who is arguably a very, very lousy fighter and who gets himself into a game with a horribly broken class and then goes on to fix that through the means of diplomacy. Of course, a lot of blackmailing, as one does. A lot of lying, of course, and a lot of improvisation and music. Because that's one thing that's always... I mean, people always get that wrong. They present these bards and then they have them not play well. I mean,
I know that in your sound booth produced audiobook, there's real music. There's, I think you even play the violin, right?
I don't. I listen to a lot of music. I am a huge music nerd, but I cannot play. So these hands are not made for playing at all. I mean, look at them. They're fat and stubbly. Doesn't work.
I have like long, very long fingers. You would be so good at piano. I'm like, I have 2 left hands. I don't know what I'm doing. But Yeah, we were talking about when I contacted you. I don't know how we got here, but we talked about maybe going to see the Arch Enemy, Soulwork, and In Flames concert in Hamburg. That would have been really great. Yeah, I just don't have the time.
Yeah, we are going. So I am going to be live streaming How Awesome It Is to you.
Yes, and
most likely,
which I appreciate. I really do. I do appreciate you flaunting copyright laws to give me an immersive experience and just making me feel like I'm missing out. I really appreciate that, and I'm not going to call the guards on you.
That's how nice a person I am.
Yes, absolutely. So, World of Chains, it's about a bard. I'm hearing a little bit of Loch Lamora, the little RPG.
For sure. There's Lies of Loch Lamora in there, and there is most definitely Patrick Rothfuss, King Killer Chronicles in there. I mean, even disregarding how he has been over the past 10, 12, is it 15 years?
12.
I know.
No, 12, yeah. I think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, his writing has still been a major influence, and I am bloody impressed by how well and musical he writes. So
in the immortal words of Mr. T, I pity the fool, right? Like, the poor guy, he's written one of the best books ever and released two of them, and now he's like stuck under this like gigantic rock of like, well, gotta do better in the next one, and he's like, just probably can't. Like, this book has been pantsed, and you know it.
Yeah, entirely. And I think he, yeah, not going to think about whether he's going down to the George Martin route, but just that I'm still goddamn impressed by what he has done.
Yes, yes, yes.
So,
and I mean,
yeah.
Right. Sorry, let me clarify this. I really like Patrick Rothfuss. I held classes about him. I love his stuff. I spent 2 hours talking about the first page, because there's like so much stuff in there. Wow. But I'm saying I'm sympathetic, because if I were in his position, I would be fucking terrified. And I would also not be able to write. Right? And I would like over-edit. He's been editing this book for like 5 years now. The poor guy. Like, seriously, the poor guy.
Yeah. It's also a question of, at this point, how much is he actually editing and how much is he just hiding from the world and trying to forget that the demands actually exist at this point. But yeah.
Yeah, and then it's up to us as readers to give him a space where he can feel comfortable to produce a book.
True. But yeah, music to me just means so goddamn much to a bard. So that's why I made it a core element of the book. I mean, just the spell casting. They actually have to play music in order to invent spells as a bard. Oh. So they have to incorporate that idea of, well, how would you invent a sleep spell? Well, you play the Wieden Lied by Brahms.
Nice. And
how do you want? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you create a flame caster like attack spell? Well, you play like a
through the fire and flames. Hi.
Nah, it's okay. I think she just wants to be on the podcast.
That's okay. Do you want her to be on the podcast?
It's cool. It's cool.
Okay.
So, can we have some water? She's a clinger.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. We have time.
But yeah, I mean, we managed to actually get a lot of cover versions of songs that we were able to create with the violin. So like, we have Mantra, a German band, we have Apocalypse Orchestra, we have...
It's like, you know how interesting that Abe is going.
Oh, there was another one incoming, but he ran away again.
Okay, good. Oh, this is cool. Okay, so you were saying fire songs, covers, there you go.
Yeah, exactly that. That we managed to get the rights to a handful of covers throughout the series, so we were able to actually get something that you knew, like Lydmore. That's a Danish electronica absolute genius. So we managed to intersperse some tunes you might know here and there, but again, it's all about the love of music. So some of them are probably pretty esoteric. If you aren't really into one genre or other, you might not get it, but that's also cool.
Yeah, totally. Like, I mean, like we talked about, we kind of bonded a little bit about our love of music, and but we're going to talk about more about this in the bonus material, because this part is just about you. So, World of Chains is pretty well received. It's been selling pretty well, I see. Oh, nice. Do you want to talk about your other series too? You mentioned you had several.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's the general gist of it, that I take what I love in games and then I hyper focus on one aspect. So like my Dragon Core Chronicles, for instance, that is my absolute love of high fantasy and dragons as a term. Where, and then I took that and mixed that with old time Dungeon Master games like Dungeon Keeper.
Where
you had to play like the master of a dungeon. You had to whip around your little stupid little minions and train them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just taking different elements of stories and series that I like, and then mixing them with games and approaches to games that I love.
This is very interesting because we have many, many things that we like the same. And again, I will love to talk about this once the show is completely done. But
of course.
Okay.
Yeah. Then we have my Hackers of Artem series. That is one of my absolute favorite worlds, because we wrote that as a shared world with just casual with Kevin Sinclair, this dude, and with Dawn Chapman, where we took each our approach to cyber into a cyberpunk world, like dystopian tech world with a lot of body modification and stuff like that. And that for me was entirely a mix of hacker-like stories, like cyberverse stories, like the old Neuromancer, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Kevin Mitnick for a bit of the social engineering part of it. Mm-hmm. And then mixing it with Cyberpunk 2077 or
the good old thing,
exactly. Shadowrun, good old. Well, if you want a shipping chainsaw arm, then you get a chainsaw arm.
Yeah, as one does.
Exactly. I mean, that part of it I've always loved, like, that you could be able to. I mean, at some point, I have a person install a tiny refrigerator in his stomach.
Yes,
because they need to smuggle something in somewhere, and that's of course a black market addition that you can buy. I mean, just replace your spleen, no problem.
I think I've seen a Coca-Cola advertisement doing that. Yeah,
yeah.
This podcast is not sponsored by Coca-Cola.
Not done by trade. This is done by trained professionals. Please, for the love of God.
Do not put a fridge in your stomach. All right. So which of these have you written first? Which one was your first breakout story?
My first series was The World of Chains. The Wayward Bard was the very first one. And then I wrote the first three books in that one. And that was while I had three kids in 2 years and five days. So we suddenly we went from being like just these people who traveled a lot and had all time in the world to just having three kids. That was a bit overwhelming. And with the full-time job at the side and writing at the side, then suddenly I almost crashed, because that was like I'd spent the last 3 years in the same world. So I wrote started writing the Dragon Core Chronicles to do something entirely different.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, we've been talking about this. Like, I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I really miss my routine of writing, because now every day is a little bit different. It kind of like unsettles me a little bit, right? Yeah. But I'm hoping that once I, you know, get back into a rhythm, that I will be able to write more in the evenings or maybe before work in the morning, and make it work that way. It could be cool. Yeah.
Right. Definitely. But have you tried for the words? Do you know that?
Yeah. I don't really need that because I already want to write. Right. It's already are there. It's just like, I really don't have the time. Like, I need to buy groceries. I need to, I'm doing a lot of overtime at the start. So, you know, you want to make a good impression. So, and so on and so forth. Like, For the Words is definitely a very good website. Lots of my friends use it. I just always find that, for me personally, right, these gamification tools kind of feel like I'm self-manipulating, right?
Yeah, and, totally.
Feel like limited by it a little bit, you know?
No, how about you? I get it. I mean, some people find that it's a bit interruptive, that it actually breaks up the flow of writing. But to somebody like me, it's more about the tiny bits of dopamine you get from having this thing that says, well, if you manage to write so many words in this amount of period of time, well, you will get some sort of reward. And that, to me, keeps me from tapping away to check out Facebook, to see and watch something on YouTube. So it's just those tiny little dopamine rewards to keep me focused, basically. But you don't have that problem.
Right, because for me, writing in itself is its own reward. And I don't want to artificially put even more dopamine layers on top of it, because then it means that if I want to write, I have to, like, you know, do a higher invest. I don't know. So yeah, you're right. Like it's personally, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's also part of the journey for me. That's super cool, is that you have to find what works for you, because you have to find, well, which editors, which kind of editors do you want to work with? Which type of personalities do you need to work with? Do you need somebody who's strict, or somebody who's actually that you can back and forth with? Stuff like that. I mean, figuring out which kind of routine and everything that works for you, and then, smithing that into a procedure or a flow that makes you write the best fucking book you possibly could. That for me is some of the joy of writing.
Okay, so just like Quest Academy, your book's a harem. Sorry, I had to say that. The best fucking book, you said? No, I'm joking, of course. Quest Academy 1 is not a harem book. Unless you want it to be, exactly. Right? I mean, the second one was really disappointing. It was like 17 chapters in, and the guy hadn't even gotten laid once. I wrote a long-ass complaint to Brian. Yeah, he hates that.
I'm going to write a harem version of Quest Academy, and I'm going to upload it in his name
on AO3.
Oh yeah,
let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do it. Yeah. Like, this is how mischief is made, guys. We should like co-author it. We gotta get Jazz in. It could be so much fun.
Just do it in
And then get like Andy Parsnow and like Jonathan McClane to narrate it.
he would love it.
I really think you would.
It's a good thing. I mean, I am pretty sure I can run away from Brian. That's the only reason why I'm even discussing this. But if he catches me, he is strong.
He is very strong.
That's not a good idea.
No. So for anyone who's like, what the fuck are those guys talking about? There's a series called Quest Academy. You should check it out. It's a very, very good book. It was like 4.8 stars at like 2,000 ratings or whatever. Like, you know, like a little small book. It was very realistic in that it's a college story and people get laid in college. That's how things work. I mean, at least in Europe. I'm very sorry for my American listeners. Which is also not true. Like, American college is the same. Just no one talks about it. It's weird. But people get laid in college. And there's like, I think, like one fade to black sex scene in Quest Academy. but it's like very early, so in the first 20 chapters or something. And people kept asking Brian, is this harem? Is this harem? Is this harem? I've heard this is harem. Is this harem? And Brian had to answer every single one, like, no, it's not. This is what it's about. He was very calm and very patient about it. I don't know if I could have been. But it's still mad fun to ask him if Quest Academy 1 is harem. so yeah, I'm very sorry, Brian. I'll try not to ask you again. I'll just assume. Sorry, Lars. I interrupted you.
No. This is important information for sure.
Very important, yes.
I am not going to write any harem series at all. Ever.
Wink. No. That's wink really hard.
Because I find that if I try to even think about writing something like that, it becomes super cringeworthy. Just like there are things that I know I would never be able to write well, like hard sci-fi. And this just ticks that box. I know I would not be able to write that well. I enjoy it sometimes. I mean, Atlas Cain, for instance.
Oh.
Right? It's damn good. Harem books. But
I mean, Daniel Schinhoven, I think, writes lots of harem stuff. I don't know him, but Andy Parson mentioned him a few times. So
I like the first book of Apocalypse Gates. But I like it now and again as a palate cleanser because it's usually pretty light and easy to get into, and it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm the opposite, maybe, of you. I write smut really well. I just don't want to necessarily. I'm like, here are my characters. This is like nice plot line, and it's like very convoluted, and everything's like put into each other. And like,
and then they fucked.
Yeah. No, because like it's always, I haven't found a niche yet where it's like where both is acceptable, right? Because if you're writing like hardcore fantasy, people often go like, oh, why are they wet parts putting into their, like, why is what? And then if you're writing smut, it's like, what's up with all the Illuminati bullshit, right? That being said, shout outs to a friend of mine who has basically written 50 Shades of Grey, but it's Illuminati. So
that's sold. Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't sound bad, the premise, right?
Yeah, no, not at all. I mean, interesting. Yeah. There are a couple of writers who do sex-heavy series and get away with it in fantasy, science fiction, and so forth. But damn, there's not many of them. Like Richard Morgan, I think, Altered Carbon.
Altered Carbon has sex scenes?
In the books, yeah, there's a couple of them here and there, the bit of sexual blackmail and stuff like that.
Right, yeah, because this one lady, and she has like several bodies, and it was heavily suggested in the series too.
And he has another series, A Land Fit for Heroes, which is amazing, which is way harder. As well, there's a lot more going on there, but he's managed to write super interesting cyberpunk-ish and fantasy, and still having a good deal of sex. There's just not many who managed to have both.
There's this German author called Rebecca Gably, and she writes historical fiction, and there's also like sex scenes in there. And I think the trick about that is making it relevant, right? Either like using it like every other scene, having it short and sweet, and then, you know, using it for characterization and not just to, heat up some loins.
Yeah.
So that's, move away from the harem talk, though, because you said you weren't going to write harem, and I don't want people to think you are. Otherwise, you might have to start a self-help group with Brian, like authors who don't write harem but people think they do. So sounds like a good plan.
Yeah, there's money in there, I think.
There's no money in self-help groups. No. Damn it. Okay, so you mentioned Wolfchains, you mentioned Dragon Core, you mentioned Artem. What's the fourth one?
I am currently writing Theft of Decks, which is a deck builder, card-based world where with a main character as a rogue. Mm-hmm. And it's basically because I bloody love Magic the Gathering, which is the absolute mm-hmm. basis for this one. And then because I love rogue stories. I mean, everything mm-hmm. that involves... You mentioned Lies of Loglamora earlier. Tight-knit teams with heist stories, stuff like that. Yes. That just really gets my blood flowing. So that is basically the thing of it, that we have a small team who get mixed up in a lot of shit, mm-hmm. and then a world where people who gain powers, they actually get cards on their bodies, like magical tattoos on their bodies that amplify their powers, that they can tap and switch out on their bodies to cause different effects, build themselves up. So basically it's a mix of having D&D with your powers and having a living deck on your body where you can tap and use the cards for different purposes.
That's very good. I also know why you chose a rogue for your card card story, because rogues have high dexterity.
Yes. We can edit this out, right? You say no. Edit. Yeah, edit.
Why? I'm not gonna edit it out. No.
Damn it.
No. Oh. This stays in. Suffering.
Oh yeah, entirely. Suffering. I chose rogues because I absolutely love side characters. Mm-hmm. Every single main character of mine. So far, at least, I'm not going to claim that I will do this forever, but so far, every main character of mine has been all about not taking the direct approach. And I love that. Not going 100% utility, but in general, be just taking your problem, not facing it head on, but just giving it a kidney punch and coming up with some intelligent, completely unexpected solution. I love coming up with that, and I love writing it.
So you're like you said, like side characters, but it's more like support characters.
Yeah, in general, okay. support characters, love those.
Again, I'm baffled by how much we both like the same thing and use it to build something completely different. But yeah, that's also more bonus material, so.
For cool. sure. But in general, also that when you have your group, you don't exactly expect these people to be the leaders.
Yeah.
And that's what I also love. You don't have these large, muscular paladins. You have the sneaky kid at the background, who's actually the
face.
Guy who comes. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, oh God. I love that so much because one thing I also love is characters who the story is about them, but the main character, quote unquote, is someone else. Like, for example, in The Great Gatsby, right? Yep. Ostensibly, The Great Gatsby is about, you know, Gatsby, but it's written from the perspective of a whole different character, and they have their own issues. That's hard to write as hell. Like, don't get me wrong, but I love that. I really do. It's lots of fun if you pull it off right. I just don't know if it's right for lit RPG as a genre, you know?
There have been a couple of stories, so I can't... There was definitely a story about somebody being like the A to the Chosen One. I can't really remember which one it was.
Yeah,
was JP Valentine?
Fate-approved sidekick?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Prophecy approved companion. PAC.
Prophecy. Oh my God. I completely butchered that. Yeah. Prophecy approved companion. Yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah. I do love that kind of writing, but yeah, it's damn hard to do. And I haven't.
It's all about giving these people their own goals, right? And it can't, their goal can't be about the main character. If you're thinking about it, the biggest and tallest fantasy story of this kind is Lord of the Rings. It's Samwise Gamgee is the hero of the story.
True.
Right? And he's mostly just like walking behind people and asking for like baked potatoes. But it's
very heroic. Sander Boyce would definitely approve of that.
Who? Sander Boyce?
Xander Boyce. Yeah, he's
Xander Boyce, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He is all about them taters.
I love fried potatoes. Like when I was a kid, every time I came home, like they would make these sliced potatoes and then crisp them just the underside until they're like brown and the top side was still like kind of soft. So you would have like this really like interesting texture of like soft on the top, you get like a little bit of bite on there, and then crisp on the bottom. Really, really good. Coupled with like I think it was like meatballs.
Okay. Yeah, I mean yeah, totally. That is actually one interesting part. I mean, lit RPG writers in general put in a lot of food in their stories.
I was about to ask you about that, yeah.
Why is that? I mean,
because food is such an easy hack to give people characters, to give characters character. You give people food and you know who they are. How do they eat? What do they eat? Why do they eat? What's the relationship with food? And it is because everyone needs to eat. It's very easy to make people relate to other people who like food. Right? It's a life hack for writers. I would be the last person to call it cheap because there's many great books who do a lot of cool stuff with it. Like, look at, Lachlan Moore has like lots of really cool food in there. And also, R. Martin, tons of food, right? And Hugh Fights the Monsters too, right?
It's true.
So it's great. So in the end, food is a very easy way to connect to people. Like even in real life, dating advice from Maddox, by the way, learn how to cook.
Has it worked?
Yes. Oh yeah, it has worked. Oh yeah, it works every 50% of the time. It works every time.
That works. That's the kind of math I can get behind.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Shout out to Anchor. You know what time it is? That's right. It's a new ad. And this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is my friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one. So go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one's from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. Guy goes hiking on the Appalachian trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time. So, we are almost 45 minutes into this episode, and I still haven't asked you the second question. So here we go. What's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
Okay, that one is pretty easy. That it's basically know who you're writing to. Because, I mean, of course, it's a way easier recommendation than it is to actually follow that recommendation. But the advice is perfect because I do not write 100% power fantasies.
Yeah,
I write way more about the characters, personal connection, about, again, about taking the indirect solutions, often quite a bit of diplomacy as well. And like World of Chains, one of the my reasons for writing it to begin with was also that I wanted something that was a low-level character, because all of the stories at that time were about the person getting some cheat at level zero and just going off to level 100 within the first book. And I wanted the exact opposite of that. So every single review I've gotten about that, well, it was cool and all, but the main character is super weak. That's not really criticism. That's just that they aren't the audience that I'm writing for.
Yes.
And as long as you can learn that you can actually find an audience that's big enough that actually fits who you're writing to, then whatever criticism you're listening to has to be viewed through that lens.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because it allows you to filter stuff out, yeah. I can relate. I have one review that... So, I don't know. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about Torchbearer, but Torchbearer is a very fundamentally a very postmodern novel. That means that it deals with ideas of, you know, identity, reality, hyper-reality, and, you know, perception. And one guy, or person, I should say, said this novel was... very good, but the main character didn't have any agency because nothing she interacted with was real until the very end of the story. And I was so tempted to write like, you're this close to getting it, this close.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, you're right. It's not my role as an author to educate. I'm supposed to write a funny story that people like, and it didn't hit for many of these people. And that's actually quite all right. Because I do think that there's a market for this book out there. But thank you for your advice. That's nice. It's very good.
Yeah.
Who did you get it from?
I cannot remember. I did get one other piece of advice that I absolutely loved from Michael Chatfield, which was never try to improve more than three things at once.
Oh,
so actually, when you're writing a new book or writing a new series or editing for that matter, you often try to get a lot of shit in there, like try to improve the characteristics of some person, try to improve the voice, try to focus on grammar, whatever. Never try to do more than three things at once in a book.
Yep.
Or learn more than three things at once, because you're going to mess it up. So if you want to learn, if you want to improve, that's absolutely cool and it's pretty much needed, but never do more than three things.
Yeah, okay. That makes perfect sense. Focus. Focus is like of vital importance to, basically everything we do, right? And if you're juggling too many things at once, something's going to fall off.
Totally. Plus, once we fix one thing, another bad habit is going to sneak in from the back, as they do.
Oh yeah. You got to stay vigilant, and like it will take some time to build this kind of thing to a certain standard, whatever you're trying to improve. That's okay.
Yeah.
I talked to Seth Ring about this the other day, and he said that his promise is, the next book is always going to be better than the one I'm doing right now. I think this is a very good, very good thing. I personally would love for my first book to be a very good book, and then I'm trying to like spend more time with one book. But I also know that like financially speaking, it's probably suicide. So I should be doing that.
There's a certain cutoff, at least. I mean, if you want to go the trad pop way and spend 15 years polishing your baby until you actually get it out there, cool. That's a method. But it can also be very bad.
I would recommend it to anyone who is more interested in really understanding how stories work and who basically the hobbyist, you know, people who don't expect to make a living out of this.
Yeah.
For those people, I would recommend revising, because or just if not, if you don't want to, right? Because it's a hobby, you can do whatever you want. But it's been fun. It's been surprisingly fun.
But Seth really has one of the most intriguing setups for writing and for editing that from anybody I've ever heard about. I mean, it's really impressive, and I'm not sure I could actually work with it, but it's super cool.
What do you mean?
That he has a lot of people who actually follow along and comment, edit his stuff as he goes along. So he can sometimes, I mean, he can get some pretty in-depth commentary or criticism of his stuff while he writes, or at least chapter to chapter.
Yeah.
While, well, the vast majority of us, we finish a book, maybe half a book, and then we toss it off to the editor and get it back, and then we have to make it look like we knew what we were doing.
We knew what we were doing.
Exactly. But he has a flow that's way faster because he does it on the fly. And then once that's done, well, it's all more grammar, line editing, copy editing, like smaller stuff. But it also takes, I mean, I would imagine at least, it takes a lot more being hardened, being able to take criticism. Yeah, being mental toughness, at least. Being
mental fortitude,
Yeah, being able to take criticism on the fly and still writing on without starting to doubt yourself. And I think I'm a bit too much of a tiny little snowflake to be able to handle that.
I mean, mimosa.
Yes, I'm a pretty flower.
Well, basically, this ties really well into editing, because the question is, what's one thing that you would go back to and change if you had to start all over again?
If there was one thing I'd teach younger me, so I knew that is one thing you should be on the lookout for, then it would be not power creep, but scope creep. I mean, thinking in depth about the elements that that past me introduced into books, and thinking about, well, that's all well and good and interesting at this very point, but think about how this is going to look when it's three books from now and when that has expanded. Because one thing is, having something interesting and adding that, but every time you introduce a new element, that can be crafting, it can be a magical system, it can be a reputation system, a deity system, all sorts of interesting gamification systems that you can, and mechanics you can introduce to your stories. But if you add too many, it grows and it can become overwhelming or end up becoming kind of pushed to the wayside and becoming inconsequential.
So this makes sense, and you can still kind of pull this off. I think The Defiance of the Fall is a story that has like lots of like nesting systems. And I've talked with a friend about this recently. I think it was Ex-Karn or Actus. And they talked about how you can nestle these systems into each other and then build on top of each other, kind of like this. And that could be also fun, but this makes sense for long stories, like really long stories. And I do agree with you on the basic premise that if you're not careful about this and intentional, then you have a lot of stuff that you need to keep in mind, and you really shouldn't be doing that.
Also, again, like we talked about earlier, the difference between writing books and writing serial fiction.
Yeah.
Because serial fiction in general, you don't ask for, I mean, you can keep on adding up, and yes, you will have to watch how much it actually, how much each part takes up of the story, and still be aware that it ends up with the result that you want it to be. But like you said, you can go back and forth, focusing your effort on different things. But if you write book to book, it's more a question of, well, I have a book here and I am going to finish that. If you add in too many systems that grow in scope, you will end up having to write super long books simply in order to have all aspects included. And that can be like difficult.
Dot your I's. Dot your I's slash your T's. The thing that I think most younger authors or newer authors in LitRPG tend to underestimate is how much work it is to keep all these systems up and running. And I personally, I would suggest just write like, if you're writing a system, plan it out and before, so know what goes where, or just be very, very minimalistic. Like, don't add anything unless it really has to be there. So that's my advice, which goes hand in hand with yours, I think.
I would say to me, it's more like you make a decision right from the front, front which kind of story you want to write.
Yeah.
Should it be system driven or story driven? I mean, you can get like JP Valentine Prophecy Proof Companion. The system is there, but it's 100% in the background. I mean, everything that happens in the system, sure, you get that, but you don't get all the stats and such. They aren't what's in the focus. But if you write something that's system heavy, or if you decide that the system should be a large part of the story in focus, then you need to, like you said, have the system ready up front, because pantsing is awesome. Making up a story as you go along, it's awesome. Making up a system as you go along, it's not awesome.
Yes. Maybe. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, it's fun as hell, but dealing with the aftermath and making it look like you actually know what you knew what you were doing sucks.
I don't know what you're talking about. Just, you know, spend 2 months revising your story. What's up here?
Exactly.
Yeah, more Patreon content, I think. Let's talk about one book that you love and why is it awesome?
Okay, so any book?
One book, any book.
Okay. Just one single book, that's not possible, dude. I can't do that. Oh, seriously, we actually talked about it earlier because it's so close in my mind and I just finished it, Heretical Fishing.
Yes.
I absolutely love that book. I mean, sometimes you just need a break. You need somewhere comfortable to rest your mind and just be happy for a while. And Heretical Fishing does that so well. It's cozy, it's relaxing, and you can just sit back and just smile. So,
And it's not just boring either. Like, there's lots of there is conflict, but you know it's always going to end well, which I love.
And the system elements of that book. I mean, I am so interested in watching when we actually learn just a tiny bit more of the system, because the way it's been handled so far has been frustratingly awesome.
Nice. Okay.
So that's been, and then I am 3/4 through First Necromancer. By Andrew Klotz, which is also I can't remember his name. Cold Rifle 89, something like that. Not entirely sure.
But cold something.
And that one totally brought me back to all the many, many, many hours I've played the Diablo 2. So it's Necromancer. There's nothing like a solid Necromancer story. I love that.
I keep waiting for one story on KU. And that's Saintus Summons Skeletons. Okay. I haven't seen it on KU yet. And I really want to get into it, but I don't want to start it on Railroad and then not be able to finish it. Because that seems like very fun.
We don't get KU in Denmark, so I just buy everything that comes.
Right, yeah. You do get kids, though. That's nice.
Yeah, definitely. It's just the hug delivery. Sometimes I just have to have a hug. She comes by.
That's awesome.
Vi vil lave film om det, så du er med over internet. Du er med i film. But yeah, how about you? What have you been listening to or reading lately?
I have one book that I can recommend to you. Because if you like fantasy stories and you like fantasy heists, you should maybe pick up the Paladin Caper.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure if that's the first book.
Yeah.
Let me see. 1 second. That's the third. By Patrick Weeks.
Okay. Don't know.
And oh wow, he wrote Mass Effect. Stuff.
Oh, okay.
The first one is called The Palace Job. The second one is called The Prophecy Con, and the third one is called The Paladin Caper. I loved these books. The first one doesn't have like great reviews, but I really liked it. Cool. I really did. It has a unicorn who's all about, you know, finding virgins. And she really wants a virgin.
Okay.
Unicorns need that.
Yeah, unicorns of need course. That. That's filthy.
No, there's no smut in it. There's absolutely no smut in it. But yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I think this this person wrote for BioWare for a long time. Okay. And then kind of jumped over into.
Oh, I am actually looking forward to you know, of course, that Brian used to work for
Larian, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But there are two writers right now who have also written for Larian, mm-hmm. for Baldur's Gate 3, who are going to be releasing books in the next couple of months.
And yeah.
Those stories I'm really looking forward to. Jack Fields and Rachel Church, not sure how to pronounce it. But
Rachel!
Those, yeah, Rachel.
Rachel, she wrote Calamity, I think, which is an amazing premise. Basically reborn as a video game villainess. Really cool. And yeah, she wrote many characters that people just freaking loved in Dragon Age. And you can maybe, you know, read that. It's going to be nice. And the other one was who?
Jack Fields.
Jack Fields.
Yeah. It is an entire, it's a vibe I haven't seen anywhere before in Red RPG. Mm-hmm. So I really hope it takes off because it's more vivid, I'd say it's more like a Jack the Ripper meets Lit RPG, not in the murder hobo fashion, but more in that it's a bloody, vivid, really emotional, weird ass world.
Brutal.
Scarlet Citadel when it comes out.
Oh, that sounds good. Let me just Google that. Let's see here.
Yeah, it's going to be some months before it's out still, but when it does,
that sounds good. Very, very good, yeah. So in the end, thank you for Larian Studios for bringing us Lit RPG.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for making your writers quit.
Come on. I think actually Larian, for game studio wise, Larian is one of the better game studios when it comes to, you know, sustainability and all the kind of stuff. But yeah.
For sure.
It's still a job and you're not freelancing, so.
And you can look at the results. I mean, when you see the all the different scandals and such, it's not like Larian has been focus of that. So from what I've heard, they actually treat their people pretty damn well.
And you know why? Because they don't have shareholders and they don't have value to maximize.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna pull out a copy of Das Kapital and like go to town, but it just makes sense, right? We have a finite amount of people and a finite amount of attention. And well, if the market is saturated, where do you think more money comes from? You cut corners, treat people worse. Also, incidentally, this is how Boeing started. Like, this is how the problem with Boeing started.
Oh, yeah.
You've got doors falling off. You've got landing gears not retracting. Yeah, because like how many airplanes are sold each year? Like the market is like done. You cannot build more, or you can build more, but no one's going to buy them, right? So the only way to earn more money is to make everything cheaper.
Great idea.
Yeah, and they need to earn more money, because if they don't, then the shareholders will sell the company. And it will go bankrupt. So, yeah.
It's
great. Great. Just great. Well, thanks to coming to the Communist Podcast. We already did. We kind of did shout outs, right? Or do you have more shout outs?
There is one series that just hasn't. I mean, okay, it requires a bit of preface. Because one of the things I really absolutely love about a series is that sometimes you can get a story where you can just see the person in this story entirely knows what they're talking about. They have lived this. I mean, either they're just so goddamn good at explaining it and have done a lot of story and studying, or they have simply lived this so much that it's a natural part of them. In the first Necromancer I just read, there was a Doomsday Prepper part of it that was just natural. That seemed just like, okay, the author, he actually knows what the hell he's talking about. He would know if he was told, well, in 7 days the world goes under, he would know what to do.
Yeah.
And for my last recommendation, that would be Nathan Amey's Black Dawn.
Black Dog.
Black Dawn.
Dawn, okay.
Dawn, yeah. Because there are two parts of those that he just does amazingly well, like describing the wilderness. I mean, this is placed, I'm not entirely sure where, but in North America somewhere, right up near Alaska or something, not entirely sure, but in the wilderness at least. And those nature parts are amazing. And then the crafting system. The crafting itself is just explained in a way where you can tell, well, this huge nerd has just spent way too much time and money on way too many different hobbies. Because it's all it's all explained like somebody who's had their hands deep in everything. I mean, smithing, carving, whatever. Nathan Amey, nice. Black Dawn. It's amazing.
Black Dawn. All right. Okay, cool. Well, with that being said, though, we are coming to the end of the main part of the podcast. It's been a lovely... Yeah, I think it should be like more than an hour, so it's a long episode. But the show will go on on Patreon. We're going to be talking a little bit more freely there. It's going to be nice. We'll talk about more harem. Or maybe not. Okay. Any last words? Oh, sorry. I should say, any last words?
Stop those puns, damn it. No, seriously, you guys are awesome. Max is also here, and that is something. So,
Struck through the heart.
Thank you for the invite.
Yeah, sure. Let's see if I'll invite you again. This has been a Crit RPG podcast with a guest, I guess. Beautiful and amazing.
No, dude, you need to pronounce, you're possibly the only goddamn podcast person in the world, lit RPG podcast person, who can pronounce my name. So please.
I'm probably also, I think, one of the only ones, but yes, Lars Markmuller.
Beautiful. Thank you.
No, this has been the Crit RPG Podcast today with Lars Machmüller, who has been an amazing guest. And I very much enjoyed having him here, even though he insulted me a lot. He didn't find my puns funny. But you, dear viewer, probably did find my puns funny, right? So you will leave a like, you will subscribe, and you will check out my Patreon, please. Have pity. Don't tell me I'm a bad actor. I know I'm a bad actor.
I love the best.
The little like tingle in the voice.
It was impressive. I think I saw a spotted a tear.
Yes. I had some onions that are rubbed. Anyway, no, thank you very much for listening and watching. And I will see you next time. And if you're on Patreon, the show goes on.